And this is Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by our friends over there at the Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan, the Concord Group with David Dubé. Thanks to him for supporting amateur football in the province. He's a big backer and knows his stuff. Also want to thank Paul Waldo at Royal LePage, the home expert team here in Regina. Give him a call, 306-502-5355. And Wheel Estate, check them out online at wheelestate.ca. I'm joined by the head coach of the Saskatoon Hilltops, Tom Sargeant, five-time champions. Tom Sargeant, five times in a row. How does that sound, my friend?
Well, it sounds not bad. Yeah, you know, as I said, it's been a lot of work, a lot of talented players come and gone, and and great coaching staff that came together and found the right chemistry to get the job done.
We'll talk about the coaching staff in a minute. We'll talk about some of the players in a minute, but let's talk about this. I know when you ask somebody to pick their favorite championship, it's kind of like picking your favorite kid. It's tough to do. I'll ask it this way. Do you appreciate this one more than the other four?
No question. You know, just because there was a different pressure, there was a lot of talk about it. And you know what? We were able to keep the eye on the prize, keep the players focused, motivated. And, you know, we talk about the grade eight. We had eight 50-year players that bought into the phenomenal job of leading. And one of the things we learned, it's not about all the talent in the room. It's finding the right leadership and that right chemistry to, believe in the guy beside you. And I think what the players are learning is the more you play for the guy next to you, it's actually better than playing for yourself.
Yeah, that's a good point. So you have eight guys that are graduating, another long list of fifth-year guys who've been here for the whole time. Do they teach each other how to be leaders? By that, is there some sort of, level of expectation when you come into this program that you're going to hold the torch up for the next guy and teach him how to do it and so on and so forth?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we hold weekly leadership meetings, so that's any fifth-year and any captain. And so these are, we talk about these values, and we talk about it's your team. As long as I see what I want to see, this is your team. And, for example, this year they had eight votes, but sometimes I have nine. And so I've been around a little bit more than them, and so I know what I want to see. And so when I go to meetings and we're all on the same page, talking the same way and doing the same things, that's when you know the team's going to go out there and play pretty well. And as I said, there's a real love for each other, and it was just sort of, as I said, everything came together, and at the end, when that Langley team came in, there is no chance they were going to get in our way. We just had such a strong belief in each other, and we knew we were going to execute the plans that coaches put forth, and they came out and played their best game of the year, and as a coach, that's all you can ask.
Now, tell me this. How does this team rank with the other four you've had in this long run here of five straight? How does this team rank in terms of character and in terms of talent?
Well, character off the charts. Talent, real good. You know, as I said, Cody Peters spent a month with the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Jordan Walls, our quarterback. You know, he what did he do? 22-1 in his career. Kirk Simons was an All-Canadian. Jason Price, an All-Canadian. You know, at the end of the day, this was the most dominant team that we've coached in this five-year run. When you just look at the numbers, you look what they did, undefeated. Average score was 50-8. This team was locked and loaded. But you understand, football's peaks and valleys, and I'm telling you, this team, we didn't lead for 1 minute and 17 seconds for the whole year.
Wow,
that's a different team. That's a different team.
That is an unbelievable stat. That might be the stat of the year in football, my friend. I know they gave you a nice shout out during the Grey Cup there, Chris Cuthbert and the gang talking about your team. That was nice. How does that make you feel when you get a shout out like that on the Grey Cup?
Well, it's great for our organization. You know, our jobs would be in our community, be positive role models and have that good image. And I think Saskatoon Hilltops have that. I think, number one, just watch how we play. We play a very disciplined, solid, clean game, and we play the right way. Our kids are physical, but they're smart, and they do it between the lines. And you don't see a lot of chirping or anything. That's just not on. So I think that's just a combination of us doing when you do the right things, people will notice you.
Yeah. Hey, Peters, he won the National Defensive Player of the Year. Had him on my podcast here recently. Really good kid. I've never watched him play live, but I asked him to describe his play, his stature and everything. He kind of, the way he described himself, he reminds me of an Adam Big Hill, the way he plays. Do you agree with that?
No question. I'm telling you, he covered up so many of our mistakes. Once he reads it and deciphers what's taking place, does he ever bring it? He comes downhill in a New York second, and it is unbelievable how explosive he is. He's a great tackler, great finisher. Was an unreal high school wrestler back in the day, so he's got that grappling background, but such a nose for the ball. So so kind and unassuming off the field, and he's just one of those guys, when he puts the pads on, there's a different switch. So he was absolutely instrumental in a lot of our defensive success this year.
Tom Sargent, head coach of the five-time champion Saskatoon Hilltops. Have you come up with a slogan for six?
Yeah, actually, the one is find the right mix for six. So what do you think of that?
That's good. That's not too bad. Eh? It's nice to be able to come up with all these different slogans. Hey, you wouldn't get to where you are, Tom Sargent, coach of the year, by the way, I might add, without your great coaching staff. You can keep your players in line for 5 years, but you also keep these guys hanging around. What's that working dynamic like in the coaching staff, in the coaching room?
Well, they're the dearest of the friends you'd ever have in this world. They're so loyal. Each one of us is one piece of the puzzle, and so we have an unreal working relationship where everything's about accountability. Everything's about being honest and being upfront and moving this thing forward. As I tell my team all the time, players come and go. That's the reality. But every year, the first thing I need to do is make sure who's coaching, who's coming back, and then we start forming the team from inside out. And you know, this staff, you look at Jeff Yowsey, Brent Turrington, you know, on the defensive side with Dave Fisher, there's over 50 years of coaching experience there. And then you go to the offensive side, and, you know, Shane Reed, our quarterback's coach, Barkley Slauson, receivers coach, Donnie Davidson, O-line coach, Andre Lalonde, running back's coach. Like, once again, just a tremendous cohesive unit. So, as I said, we work real well together. We're very honest with each other. We demand, we expect. Mm-hmm. And the players certainly know that how galvanized we are as a group, and that certainly pays off for everybody.
Yeah, you know, you talk about players come and go, but the one thing I'm kind of picking up with the Hilltops here, you have guys stay 5 years, and in their fifth year, they're kind of the highlights. You call the guys the grade eight, so it's everybody else's duty to prop those guys up and to make sure they go out in a winning note or the best that they can. And so even though they come and go, it seems like you guys have a strong alumni. Everybody's proud to be in that Hilltops family, whether they're in the family right now or whether they've branched off and they've left the program because they've graduated.
Absolutely. And as I said, we believe the environment we create are second to none. We believe the facility we have is second to none. We don't care if you play 1 year or play 5 years. You're a Hilltop, and we expect you to go out there and use that to your advantage in this world and become a bigger difference than just being an athlete. And so we sell the whole person holistically all the time. And you know, as I said, the coaches that I have coaching people, they're going to be better for it. They certainly move on and do bigger and better things, which makes the Hilltop community extremely proud.
Let me ask you a question, though, okay? You're only as good as the league around you, and I'm not just talking PFC. I'm talking across Canada. You guys are steamrolling teams. You just said yourself you only trailed by a minute and 17 seconds the whole season, which is remarkable. How concerned are you about the state of junior football in the terms of getting these other programs into a competitive mix where I know you can only coach one team, Tom, but what I'm getting at is how concerned are you about the overall health of junior football?
Well, you know what? I think, number one, it's a great product. It's for guys between 18 and 22. And so we're blessed. We have 65-70% of our guys go to school. But a lot of our all-Canadians don't go to school. So you certainly need that vehicle. And, boy, there's a lot of high-end coaches. I really believe, ultimately, our program, the way we're doing things, there's coaches doing just as good a job as we are. But it's what you sell, what they buy. And I just believe our group does it a little bit differently. And, you know, there's a pretty, at our game last week, someone commented, hey, you know what, that's a pretty good team out there, pretty good athletes, but we do something just a little bit different. So, you know what, I just think right now we got that right formula. The magic potion, whatever it is, I don't know, and that's a great thing. Well, you can't explain it, but, no, there's quality programs, quality teams out there, and we're just having our day right now. Yeah. As they say, it's football.
Yeah.
It's amazing what we've been able to do with, you know, look at Calgary. Calgary's been the rock on the roost for how long, the Stampeders? Well, they just won their second one in 4 years when they were expected to win all 4 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know what? We just do it right, and we don't even know what we're doing. So that's half the battle.
Okay, and lastly, how long do you want to be doing it for, Tom? How long do you want to be coaching here for? Because I know you're an educator. You've been doing this a long time. How long do you still want to be walking the sidelines, chasing the bling, as it were?
Well, as long as the fire keeps a burning, because it's a burning. I meet with my board of directors, and, you know, I'm always 1 year at a time. And right now I feel great physically, mentally, and love the scenarios that I'm in. So, you know, you just never know. At some point in time, yeah, we're going to get there, and there'll be other things to pursue, but I love being a Hilltop. I wouldn't be standing here if it wasn't for the Saskatoon Hilltop. So I'm going to continue to be loyal because that's what I expect from the people around me.
Well, Tom Sargent's been a great guest on this podcast, and why not? He's dripping with championship, oozing championship out of his pores, so we like being around winners on this podcast. Thanks for this, Tom.
Anytime, Ballsy. You keep up your work too, bud.
And this is Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by our friends at Pizza Hut in Saskatchewan, also Wheel Estate and Paul Waldo over at Royal LePage, the home expert team. And I'm joined on the phone by Jim Mullen from Crown Countdown U, one of the voices, one of the great voices of amateur football here in Canada. Are we going to get a national TV deal for this U Sports football, my friend?
You'll get something. I think that U Sports is in the position right now where they are selling low. Very low. The ratings number came out for the Vanier Cup. Originally, it was 96. It was just upgraded this morning to 138. So those are the views on phones and Apple TV and secondary devices. Still, 138 is the lowest that that I can ever remember for this final. So you take a look at the two semifinal games that came in at 39 and 66,000. It's not much of a TV product right now. When we were out there a few years ago, David Dubé and myself trying to sell the Northern Eight, our approach to it was the product was worth zero minus the cost of production. I think that right now U Sports TV product is lower than that, in that they've got to go, I think, and actually buy time off of TSN. And to do that, you're buying all your promo that leads up to it and the broadcast itself. So this is going to be a very expensive proposition for U Sports to stay on TV for a year until they can figure out what their playoff system is all about.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. It's remarkable to me that this entity wasn't able to capitalize. You were a big part of the 2011 Vanier Cup, arguably the greatest ever. It was played at the site of the Grey Cup the day before, McMaster and Laval, of course. And then 2012, I think they had a record crowd of 37,000 or thereabouts. And then after that, it fell off the map. What the heck happened?
Well, MRX ran the event, and in both cases, in Vancouver and Toronto, they had to work with David Braley. And David Braley wanted his slice of the pie. Basically, he wanted half of the pie, because if it was run in conjunction with the Grey Cup Festival, some of his people would be working on it. Mm-hmm. And so the return that came back to U Sports in the view of U Sports wasn't enough. So if they're getting 40% of the revenue, 30% of the revenue, somewhere in there, that doesn't work for them. But as we've seen, they've had crowds that are in the 7,000 to 12,000 range now, and so they've got 100% of that as opposed to 40% of 39,000. I don't know what's better for the sport. Do you? He says facetiously.
Yeah.
There was also the concern on the CIS at the time that the event itself was in the shadow of the Grey Cup. Well, of course it's going to be in the shadow of the Grey Cup. The Grey Cup at that time was definitely the number one TV event in Canada for sports. Right now it's number two behind the Super Bowl. So it's a huge event. And to be a part of it, to continue that spot on Friday Night Football like they did, on TSN, that's where the upside is, getting exposure for your product.
Well,
Just one more point here, Ballsy.
Yeah.
I can see on their side, this is their big special week, right? This is where they have their award show. This is where they have their coaches get together. This is where they take over a city. They feel like they're number one. And I can see how they would feel just a wash in Grey Cupness in a place like Vancouver or a place like Toronto. Make Friday night your night. Still have your stuff. Just get over that you have to be number one in a city. and maybe you can plant your flag in a place where a lot of people can see it.
All right, more eyes, more promotion, and we've always talked about this, Jim. If you don't make it a big deal, nobody else will think it's a big deal. And I think we got to get around this this Canadiana mentality that, well, we're Canadian, we're not that good. You know, that type of mentality that you've always tweeted about there in the Twitter world. Okay, so, you know, the thing is, local carriers cover some of the great games and much of the population doesn't get to see it. Then we get to a national stage and we get games where Laval's crushing St. FX 63-0. Talk about the playoff format and what do we got to do to get this fixed? Can we have a setup in Canada like they do in the States where there is a Division One and a Division Two or something like that?
I don't see a Division One and a Division Two happening. I really don't. There's this belief from the AUS coaches, and I've talked to a lot of them, that if you split off into Division One and Division Two, some of these schools will just stop playing football. The solution that U Sports is putting forward is an 8-team national playoff, at least the coaches. Now, this thing still has to go through a couple of committees and levels, and basically, it's got to go through to the athletic directors. Then it's got to go up to the board. It's a very slow process. And process is something that really plagues U Sports when it comes to making expedient decisions on items that they need to react to. They're reacting very slowly to this. So at least there's a discussion of an 8-team national playoff. Now, how do you select those teams? Who gets in there? Right now, we don't have interconference play. We don't have non-conference play that matters. So we have four conferences that essentially play in different silos. How do you determine who that extra team is? And when I say extra team, you know there's only going to be one AUS team in the mix, hosting a quarterfinal. You've got three other wild card teams. Who are they? We don't know. We don't have a metric to measure them by. So is it the runners up in the conference finals? Well, if it's the runners up in the conference finals, doesn't that make the conference finals redundant?
Yeah, that's right.
Doesn't that turn it into a preseason game for the playoff round?
Yeah.
I know you might get seeding. I know you might get a home field advantage on the following week. But that's a way to completely destroy the conference finals. That's why I was putting a 6-team proposal forward. It went into the mix. There was some discussion about it, but they want 8 teams because typically when the coaches talk, you know, it's what's in it for me. There's got to be something in it for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have something in it for the game. Let's create some sort of competition during the season where we have teams playing teams from different areas of the country that you can put on TV,
mm-hmm.
and then you can rank the conferences by, that then you can rank the teams by. So at the end, we know who the best teams are, or at least the 7 best teams are, and the AUS going into the playoffs. So we can have some competitive playoffs.
Yeah, that makes sense. Is it feasible though to do that? Is it feasible to have interconference games like Calgary travel to Laval or UBC playing Western or something like that?
Well, in my latest proposal, what I put forward is that non-conference games are elective, and there is a point scoring system for it. So if one of the things that I think U Sports has to look at is that corridor where you have 16 teams in Quebec and Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely viable for teams in that area to play each other on their bye weeks. Now, if they want to have teams from the West compete, you give extra points for travel within your results. And these games are elective. They're not scheduled. So you can take a look at Quebec. These teams have 2 bye weeks. With one of those bye weeks, Laval could decide, hey, we want to get that insurance policy so that if we go into a conference final and we may lose the conference final against Montreal, we want to have as many points as possible. We're going to go out and play Calgary or UBC because we know we can get more points if we can go on the road and travel over time zones. I think that's the incentive
yeah.
For are playing games in Western Canada. But it's the choice of the team, whether they want to play a non-conference game, how they schedule a non-conference game, and how they capitalize on that non-conference game. Unfortunately, the U Sports can't walk and chew gum at the same time. So all they were looking at was the playoff system.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, you can't have one without the other.
No, you can't.
In terms of having non-conference structure. 40% of games in the United States are non-conference games. That's how you can rank a top 25.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you, Jim. How do they rank? How do they rank the teams now? Like, how do you do? Honestly, I've always wondered that, and people have asked me, how do teams get ranked?
They have a system called ELO. People refer to it as ELO. It's a system based on chess. That was developed a number of years ago, and it's been slightly modified for sports. And it's a ranking system that's used in some NCAA sports as well. And basically, it's kind of a strength of competitors, strength of schedule thing. I don't want to get into the algorithm of it,
yeah.
But it's driven by an algorithm. And we know how great algorithms have been for our society. But in addition to that, there's a set of voters. There's about 13 voters that vote every week. And the ELO is equal to those 13 voters in terms of strength of selection. Now, ELO this year at the end of the season selected Laurier. I think they selected Laurier high as six, but with the voters brought it down to ninth. Okay, consider that. Laurier was in ninth place nationally because of the algorithm, but in the OUA, they placed seventh. Stop and think about that for a second. This is the system that they have that is probably going to end up selecting the top eight teams in a national playoff without non-conference play. This is insane.
Yeah, who sits and says that's a good idea? Like, these are supposed to be, there's a difference between smart and educated, I guess, because who sits at the top and says, you know, I approve that. That's a good idea.
Well, see, the problem with ELO is this. You could use ELO if you had non-conference games, but
right.
The only non-conference games that we see are the national playoff games. So we have three national playoff games per year. We have 3.9% of our games that are non-conference games versus 40% in the United States. So if you look at ELO working in the United States, it can work pretty well. Any strength of schedule system can work pretty well because there's enough competitor versus competitor versus competitor to determine where everybody is in that 139-team field of FCS and FBS.
Yeah.
Here, we only get it at the end of the season, so you can't even follow along. As I said, everybody is in a different silo. So if you only have AUS teams playing AUS teams, and you only have Canada West teams playing Canada West teams through the year, how do you rate all of those teams, those 10 teams, based on any sort of measurable metric other than a judgment that the algorithm cannot read how those teams play against each other?
Unreal. And lastly, it looks like we have an independent commissioner to help with eligibility stuff. A little too late for the Rams. What do you make of that situation?
Richard McClain is a really good guy. He's the guy that reached out to me and said that I should be on the Football Canada Board of Directors when he was president of Football Canada. Gave new structure to Football Canada, which I think has helped in the way that it operates. He is the president of IFAF, the world governing body of American football. And he's guided them through really a giant political mess not of his making. Basically, there were two IFAPs for about 6 years, and it had to go to the Court of Sport Arbitration in Paris, and he led them through all that and has now pulled the two sides together after going through that process. So he's done some impressive things in terms of working with football, kind of as a football politician. He hasn't been given a lot of power here. What he's been given is a role where he's writing policy. So he's writing policy on how to operate the East-West Bowl right now, for example. That's his main thing. What you need to do for a Vanier Cup book and a Vanier bid book. He's not going to have the influence to direct the business side of this thing. He's going to be a moderator when it comes to looking at the playoff system. He's on board with me in terms of, yeah, we need non-conference games feeding into this. But the organization is such, as I said, they can only do one thing at a time. They don't see the linkage between things. my worry for Richard is that he's on contract on kind of a year-to-year basis. He isn't even on a one-year contract on this thing. He's on a contract just to the end of East-West Bowl. And I know that originally it was looked at that this was going to be some kind of commissioner's type job. But right now he's just a policy writer. And I'd like to see that position grow, and I'd like to see more confidence and more resources given to that office or that direction right now, because he doesn't have a lot of resources.
Well,
to work with.
Until we start taking athletics seriously at the U Sports level, nobody will take it seriously. Do you agree with that statement? Like, honestly, it's ridiculous.
I've always said it's just a case of priorities. And if university presidents across this country, for the most part, have decided that their brand through university athletics is not a priority. And we can tell that by the way funding goes. And we can tell that by the way, over the years at least, how presidents haven't necessarily been involved in the administration like the NCAA. The NCAA is run by university presidents on their board, right?
Yeah, that's right.
It's, you know, here it's left to athletic directors who always have one hand tied behind their back because of their budgets. It comes down to priorities, and some schools do have it as a priority, and some schools do ride a high cycle when they get a president in who really believes in athletics. We've seen that at UBC, for example, where Martha Piper was involved, and they created the Millennium Breakfast, and they've got one of the biggest endowments in Canada as a result for athletics. Mm-hmm. And then new presidents came in, athletics dropped off the map. They almost lost all their varsity teams a few years ago. Then Santa Ono comes in, the newest president at UBC. He was the president out at the University of Cincinnati, big Zach Valero's fan. And you know, there he is crowd surfing at Thunderbird Stadium at homecoming with 9,500 people there. And there's 9,500 people there because from the top down, they've made it a priority. Mm-hmm. The football team is a priority at UBC. That's why they get resources. You can talk about contributors all you want, like Dave Sadu. At the end of the day, the school's behind the program, and that's the thing that matters.
Well, we need people to start listening to guys like Jim Mullen and also David Dube, and maybe those voices in the wilderness will shake some trees and we'll get some sense and logic. Thanks for this, Jim. We appreciate it, okay?
Thanks very much. And the last Crown Countdown U is up on cbcsports.ca
yes.
on Wednesday night, and it's on CH on Thursday night at, let's see, Central Time? That'd be 10:30?
Yeah.
I'm in Regina right now, by the way.
I know, Faye. That's great. Thanks for spending your tourist dollars here on this icy day. I'm glad you're in.
Yeah, I'm skating on the road.
Hey, thanks, buddy, and you do a great job on Crown Countdown. You appreciate it.
Okay, thanks very much, Baldy.
And this is Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by our friends at Pizza Hut in Saskatchewan and David Dubé out there in Saskatoon with the Concord Group. Thanks to him for supporting amateur sports, especially football. Although this segment, we're going to deviate from that. I'll get to that in a second. It's also brought to you by Royal LePage and Paul Waldo over there, the home expert team. Give Paul a call if you want to get in the real estate game, 306-502-5355. And it's never too early to think about camping. If you have a travel trailer you want to rent or you want to rent one out, you can check them out online, wheelestate.ca, and all their rentals backed by a $1 million insurance policy. Yeah, I'm deviating from the football talk for a great cause out in Moose Jaw coming up here December the 1st. That would be Sets for Supper, and I'm joined by Jenna Miley and also Madison DeCorby. Now, you're both volleyball players, but Jenna, you're kind of the president, I'm told, of this charity function. Tell us about it. What is Sets for Supper?
Yeah, so Sets for Supper is two charity volleyball games, with the first game featuring local celebrities and the second game featuring high school athletes. So all of our funds raised from this event are going towards supporting Riverside Mission, which is a local soup kitchen and men's shelter here in Moose Jaw.
How did you guys come up with the idea of doing this and really making the shelter the benefactor here?
We had the opportunity to attend a leadership conference this year called Passion of Purpose. And this conference gave me a grant to start my idea called Sets for Supper.
That's outstanding. And of course, obviously, we know that it's a problem not just in Moose Jaw, but all around. So, Madison, where is this event going to be taking place?
It's going to be taking place at our school, Vanier Collegiate, in the gym on December 1st at 1 p.m.
Okay. And what's it cost to enter? Like, how does the fundraising component work here?
So each player participating has to raise $100 in pledges to participate, and there's going to be a penny parade and possibly a silent auction, and admission is by a donation at the door.
Awesome. Okay, and so you guys talked about celebrities, local celebrities. Jenna, who do we got in terms of maybe, I know there's a lot of former and current Rough Riders that like to get active. Is there anybody from the Rough Rider alumni getting on board here for this?
Yeah, so we have Jeremy O'Day, he's going to be playing, and then Scott Schultz and Chris Best are going to be coaching.
Okay, so yeah, Jeremy O'Day's the only guy in shape enough that could play, right? I know Schultz, he good Moose Jaw boy, can't get off the ground, and and Bestie, I know him well, he's just recovering from his hip problems. Hey guys, I want to ask both of you, because you're both volleyball players. Jenna, we'll start with you. Why do you like the game of volleyball?
What do I like best? I probably like the team the best. I don't know. Getting together with all my friends and having the game out there. It's a lot of fun.
How long have you been playing volleyball, Jenna?
I've been playing since grade 7, so about 6 years now.
Awesome. Madison, then, you're not a volleyball player, but you're involved here. So what's your passion behind this? Like, why are you passionate about something like this?
Riverside Mission, I just believe, is such a good cause in Moose Jaw. And it's something so worthwhile, and it's so rewarding putting something into it like this.
All right. So once again, ladies, whoever wants to answer this, how do people go about getting involved in this? When does it take place? And do you have a website or anything where they can learn more about this?
All right. Yeah. So again, our event is happening at 1 p.m. on December 1st at Vanier Collegiate. Admission is by donation at the door. We do have an Instagram page, Sets for Supper, a Facebook page, Sets for Supper, and then our website is setsforsupper.wordpress.com.
Excellent, girls. Jenna, Madison, thanks for joining me here and Growing the Game with Ballsy, and good luck with your event.
Thank you very much.
And that will bring to a close another edition of Growing the Game with Ballsy. Thanks to my sponsors. That would be Wheel Estate. Check them out online at wheelestate.ca. The Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan and the Concord Group of Companies, headed up by David Dubé. Thanks to him for his support. And also, like to thank Paul Waldo over at Royal LePage, the home expert team. Give him a call if you want to get in the real estate game at 306-502-5355. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time.